straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 194, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our really good friends at Bud Light. My name's Cedric Golden. I'm joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles, and an old favorite of ours who I know from personal experience enjoys himself a Bud Light. Our guy, Rob Babers, Texas legend, is on the line. Rob B., what's cracking?
Man, I'm doing great, man. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. If it was a little later in the day after my show, I'd be Bud Light right now, but it's a little too early.
Well, speaking of your show, I know people need to know the show's called Triple Option, and you're on 3 to 7 weekdays with our buddy Kevin Dunn and Brad Kellner, who looks really young in the publicity photo. 104.9 The Horn. And always some good laughs. If I'm on the road, I'm listening, Rob B. I might not always text you, but I'm usually listening. I had to give the black quarterback, Donnie Little, a shout-out a couple of weeks ago. It was a black quarterback before VY.
No doubt, man. I know Donnie Little very well, man. We used to hang out at he used to throw a little music festival down here, man.
And what? Austin.
Yeah. Now he's working in Tyler, right?
Tell me something about my hometown that I don't know, but I know he was hanging out with Earl a few weeks ago in my hometown.
Okay. Well, I got to go make sure, but I believe Tyler Juco was where he was at, something like that, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, check me out on that. You the journalist.
Well, Rod B., I went to Lubbock last weekend and didn't like everything I saw, as Texas fans will attest, but – they came out with the W, which is all that counts. What's your general reaction to what you saw in Lubbock on Saturday, Rod?
Yeah, to me, it's strange. You know, they had no business winning that game. Right. Also, losing that game all at the same time. Both of those things can be true. A lot of mistakes made on offense, defense, and special teams, so there's a lot to correct. But it did show me that Sam Ehlinger, man, when you got Sam Ehlinger, you do always have a chance. I love the story. That he went to his coach with 3:13 left, down 15, and said, "Oh man, they left us too much time. We're gonna go down there and win it." That's VY-esque type swagger to be able to tell your coach. I mean, your win probability at that point was what 0.01%. But I teammates, they believed in him, and I believe in Sam Ehlinger too. I think if they clean up some of the mistakes, they won't put so much of a burden on him. There were times in that game, guys, where he was trying too hard, because I think he saw, I got to win this game because my defense, the special teams, even the offensive line may not get it done. I may have to do it all on my own. And when Sam starts thinking like that and playing like that, I think that's a liability.
I do too, Rod, and I know that you're one of the better tacklers to ever come through Texas, and that's your stat. I mean, I tune into your show to hear about the missed tackles. You chart them. I know you chart them. What was that picture? I know what my eyes saw, but what did the numbers say?
I charted 19. Now, guys, I only chart a missed tackle when a guy actually attempts a tackle. So sometimes, you know, remember the T.J. Vasher slant route that ends up being a touchdown? Mm-hmm. Multiple tackles on that play.
Right.
I count Jalen Green as a missed tackle on that play because he never actually attempted a tackle. He was running with him, but he never attempted the tackle, so he didn't get a missed tackle. A lot of guys took bad angles to the football that took them out of the play, so they didn't attempt the tackle. So to some people, that's a missed tackle, but not to me. So with that definition, I counted 19 missed tackles, guys, but you could have easily gotten up to 25. I wonder what Tom Herman's count is, and I'd like to know that. But as a result of those missed tackles, I counted 167 extra yards. Two of the touchdowns Texas Tech scored on offense, they had multiple missed tackles on those. There were 10 different players that missed those 19 tackles, most of those probably by the linebacking core, to be honest with you. And I think that's where Texas Tech targeted the guys. They targeted And it was a brilliant offensive game plan by David Yost. He targeted the intermediate area of that defense, short to intermediate area. We all know, we were all worried about the linebackers before the season started. They put those linebackers in conflict constantly, and those linebackers did not rise to the occasion. When those guys were put in conflict, you often saw them give up plays, or you often saw them miss tackles because they were out of position. And when Texas adjusted by putting the safeties in the box, bringing down Chris Brown, bringing down Kane Stearns into the box to help those linebackers more, to help out with that short, high-percentage passing game, they started attacking the corners. And Texas' corners did not hold up in coverage and man-to-man either. So the corners were exposed when they tried to help the linebackers. Guys, that blueprint will be replicated every week in the Big 12 fixes it.
So put it in perspective for us, Rod B. I mean, as far as historical value, how bad was the tackling as far as you've seen? I remember a couple of UCLA games, you know, where UCLA scored 55 points at Austin, and then the one in the Rose Bowl wasn't much better.
The guys, the one that I've seen, I mean, there are a few that are really bad. I mean, the BYU game that I was in Provo was probably among the worst.
Oh, wow.
That I've ever seen in my life. That got Manny Diaz fired. I mean, essentially, that was the game that got him fired.
That may have been your last game as a sideline reporter too, Robbie.
I think you're right, Sam.
I wrote about it.
We digress.
Because I have the truth about what I saw, all right?
And it wasn't. I love him. That's why I love him. He tells the truth.
Exactly. So my concern here is, guys, I think it is something that Texas can get better at. We even saw those Texas teams, last year, right? Todd Orlando's teams were dreadful at times at missing tackles. But in the Alamo Bowl against Utah, they were a sound tackling team, right? So you know it's something that can be fixed. So I think the COVID offseason is a big issue, of course. But you're bringing in Chris Ash, who's one of his calling cards, right, is that he teaches the rugby tackling style. That was one of his obsessions. He solved that problem for Urban Meyer at Ohio State. So I still have faith that they'll get that done. They just need time. They need reps. And, guys, effort. Effort's going to be a big part of this, right? Mm-hmm. Pursuit to the football. And there were guys out there that poor tackling effort at times. You can't have that. That's inexcusable, the poor tackling effort. So I think that's something that Tom Herman will get cleaned up. He said those guys were embarrassed by watching that film, and I understand how that feels.
Rob, did you say rugby tackling style or Rutgers tackling style? I don't remember. I lost you older.
Which one? You're hating now.
My earpiece isn't working. Did you say Rutgers or Rutgers?
For him this morning, man. He's feeling it.
Well, let's hear what Tom Herman had to say about the tackling.
Our players on defense, they're embarrassed. You know, they watched the same video you watched, and the same, they were part of the same game everybody else saw, and they know that they've got to tackle better. They've got to, you know, it wasn't really for the most part any missed assignments or out of position. We just didn't finish plays when we needed to, and so I think, you know, really just learning those lessons and being able to coach a group of guys that's hungry to be coached rather than licking their wounds after a loss. They won the game. They're happy they won the game, but they understand that we can't accomplish our goals playing like that each and every week.
I think that's the first time he's ever said embarrassed since he's been coaching here. I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Well,
let's go. Let's talk about rugby tackling. How familiar are you with that, Rod? Does it work? How many other DCs in college use that style?
I am not that familiar. When I was playing, that wasn't a popular style. You know, Pete Carroll's the one that popularized this when the Seattle Seahawks made their Super Bowl run in 2014. As a matter of fact, Chris Ash, he credits Pete Carroll for inspiring him to adopt the rugby tackling style. And Pete Carroll claims that it is a safer style of tackling because it's something that you can practice and replicate in practice without a lot of the variables of the physicality that gets guys hurt or exposing them to injury. Also, they believe that it's a more sound tackling style in the open field in the open field. And now these days you work in space. So I believe in Pete Carroll, and Pete Carroll's a brilliant defensive mind. So that's where he got it from. And even Urban Meyer admitted that at first he wasn't on board with the rugby tackling style, and they were actually one of the worst teams in the country when Chris Ash decided to convince Urban Meyer of, you know, adopting the rugby tackling style. And Urban Meyer credits it with being one of the reasons they won the national title. in a few years later. So it has worked here at Texas. I don't know if they have the time right now to implement it, considering all the bad technique and all the bad fundamentals we've seen this team utilize in tackling under Todd Orlando. I mean, Todd Orlando was teaching these guys to launch themselves like a missile, to project themselves like a projectile into ball carriers, which works at times. It can, to give you the big, you know, splash play. You want the Sports Center highlight, that's great. But guys, I never had a Sports Center highlight hit like that. I just got guys to the ground. It wasn't pretty and it didn't look sexy, but man, just hit, hang on, and hope for help. Sometimes that's just the more effective way to tackle.
Just wait for the cavalry to show up. Wait, and
slow them down. Your friends are coming. Your boys are coming. Just slow them down and use the sideline. That's the Roderick Thompson run at the end of the game, the 70 something yard run. Right. Nobody use the sideline.
Yeah. Push him out. Push him out. I mean, come on. Come on. So really, are you almost saying he really misses the spring drills and maybe a fuller August, a normal off-season thing to implement the rugby, and that's going to be a big part of why this is going to be a slower work in progress?
No question. I mean, think about it, guys. I mean, no spring training at all. That's why, I think it hurts the offensive line more, too. I mean, think about it. We know more than any other group, position group, the offensive line works as a unit, right? All of them together. Right. And I can go out there and do one-on-one drills with a wide receiver. I'm still within the COVID regulations. Everything's fine. And we actually can bring a quarterback out and we can practice one-on-one. I can work my bump and run technique. I can work my hips and my leverage, my eyes, all those things. If you're an offensive lineman, when are you working on offensive line drill? Talking about ones that are actually relevant, in pads, being able to be physical. They probably done that all offseason until training camp. So I think their progress, unfortunately, is going to be slow. But I think also for the DBs, and think about how bad we were at tackling, guys. We led the Big 12 in missed tackles last year. We were that bad. We averaged 12 missed tackles per game. We did improve through as the year went on, but we were really bad. So we have to think about where we're coming from. We're coming as one of the worst tackling teams in the country, and that is where Chris Ash has to start his reform of tackling here at Texas. So unfortunately, you got to learn on the fly, and you don't really have a lot of time. It's the Big 12. You have air raid-ish offenses you're going to play now. There's Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham are back together there at TCU, right? You got Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. So those teams are going to try to put you in space and try to exploit the fact that you've been bad at tackling. Let's just be honest.
I know, Rod, you mentioned Doug Meacham and Sonny Cumbie. It's almost going to be like playing Texas Tech in back-to-back weeks. Texas plays host to TCU 11 o'clock on Saturday. But is it going to present the kind of problems we saw in Lubbock? Is TCU that dynamic? I don't fear, even though he lit Texas up last year, I don't really fear Max Duggan like I fear Alan Bowman, who's been doing it for a while.
I agree. When Alan Bowman got in the groove, when he got in the rhythm, that's why you would see them go up tempo. That's why I worry about this too. I believe tempo hurts Texas defense as well. So I think you expect them to go tempo. I expect them to have a short, intermediate, high percentage passing game. So that helped out, you know, Alan Bowman too versus Texas. That fit that was really compatible with their DNA. That's what they like to do anyway. So Max Duggan, who's not really an accurate passer, I can see them trying to get him in a rhythm by also taking advantage of Texas linebackers with the short intermediate passing game. So you're going to see that with TCU. I'm with you. I'm not concerned about Duggan beating Texas with deep, accurate throws. I think if he's going to do it, and I know he completed some of those last year, I think it'll be the short, intermediate passing game they'll try to work against Texas and try to keep drives alive against Texas. They won't be as potent as Texas Tech, in my opinion, because Texas Tech's wide receivers were the real deal. I like Texas wide receivers. I think they're a good but I don't think TCU's got wide receivers as good as Texas Tech's.
Right. Well, Jalen Rager's gone. He's in the NFL now. TJ Vasher for Texas Tech, 6'6" body. He's going to be a player. He's tough to deal with. Yeah. The trouble is you got Max Duggan's legs. You know, Alan Bowman didn't run. And Duggan's a much, much better athlete. So you got to keep that defense honest. So they got to be especially guarded against him running, don't they?
I totally agree with you, Kirk. That's to me, that's the biggest concern is when the play down, and then Duggan just becomes an athlete, right? He's no longer trying to be a quarterback. He's no longer worried about technique in the pocket. No, he's just going to run out there in the open field. And we know our linebackers miss more tackles versus Texas Tech than any other position group. So I'm worried about our linebackers trying to spy him and also when he gets in the open field. So if I'm TCU, it's a great point, Kirk. I think the design run game has got to be a big part of it too. And I wonder if that is a concern, though, with Max Duggan, considering, you know, what, 3-4 weeks ago, we considered he wasn't going to play football ever again in his life.
Had a heart condition, yes.
Heart condition. But, I'm sure that's not a concern, and he's safe and ready to go. But maybe because their quarterback depth is a question, maybe they don't want to expose him too much because I don't know what they have behind him. But quarterback run game has got to be a big part of your game plan versus Texas, because I'm with you. I would expose those linebackers in the open field.
Yeah, that was a very good point. I mean, Gary Patterson was on the conference call Monday and said Duggan's hands were cramping up on the sideline just from playing a half because Matt Downing, the walk-on of Georgia who transferred, started the game. So I think he's a little leery of maybe playing a whole game. You're right, Rod B. So he may use them both. He may use both quarterbacks. And, you know, speaking of Gary Patterson, you know, he's kind of the defensive guru in this league. What is it about his coaching style that makes him so successful, Rod?
Well, I think from the ground up, and that's why the NFL loves Gary Patterson. You know, I think his hybrid defenses are really something that has been able to be really effective versus spread offenses, and especially the types of players he recruits. He likes to have guys who are, like I said, more of a hybrid defenders on the outside. He's always
Jerry Hughes is one.
Gary Hughes is one. I mean, he's got tons of those guys, right? And I think that fits well in a position flex, almost positionless football that we're heading towards. More and more starting to hear that term. Gary Patterson's defenses are perfectly suited to defend that kind of football. But, I mean, let's be honest. The truth is nobody's really been able to stop, you know, these air raid-ish offenses. I mean, even Gary Patterson, when he came into the Big 12, he got lit up by him, and he sold his soul to Doug Meacham and Sonny Cumbie and had his best season ever in 2014, right? And this is what scares me, guys. I think Max Duggan is kind of like Trevon Boykin to me. Remember Trevon Boykin was playing wide receiver?
Mm-hmm. Right.
They put him in a perfect offense, perfectly compatible with his skill set, and then, boom, 2014 happens, which he's And I think, you know, you can do that with Max Duggan potentially too. But getting back to the defense, I think the position flex is what excites me about Gary Patterson. He's always been one of those guys that likes the hybridism, I like to call, in football, positionless football. He was headed there before a lot of teams were. Now it's popular, but it's something he was doing out of necessity years ago.
Where are the sacks, Rod B., from Chris Esch? I don't think Texas had one in Lubbock. Where are the sacks?
Getting pressure, though, guys. I wish college football counted pressures. I think pro football focus does it. But I wish more, you know, ESPN and more mainstream sites calculated pressures. Because, I mean, how many pressures we think Joseph Osai got in that game?
He was so close.
Game of inches. So I think they're getting pressure, but you're right. It's not culminating into sacks. In the Big 12, that's going to be a problem because, as Kirk mentioned, you're going to meet more and more dual-threat quarterbacks who can evade that pressure, right, who can get outside the pocket, who can make something happen. So I am a little worried about that production. But if they keep applying the pressure, I think it'll lead to pressures of deception will lead to turnovers for Texas. And they did create 3 turnovers in that game. So I know the defensive line not getting the sacks people wanted. That was also the case versus UTEP. I think sooner or later those pressures will start culminating in the sacks. You just got to give it some time.
Right. And 2 huge takeaways, Chris Brown interception, Chris Adamora had an interception. And Chains flipped the field. So those were huge. We've been kind of on downer a little bit, and they did win. So who's playing well on defense? How much do you like Josh Thompson? What do you see there?
I like Adamora. I like him. They attacked him, too. They came after him, guys. I mean, that first touchdown, they threw at Adamora. Coverage actually was great. It was just a great throw and a great play by the wide receiver. So I like Adamora. He's big. He's athletic. So I think he's going to be a game changer for the Longhorns. I mean, I really love Joseph Osai. I think Joseph Osai's got a chance to be the defensive player of the year in the Big 12. And I think if he's, you know, if he can just continue to do what he did versus Tech, he'll start racking up some of those sacks. Caden Stearns, I wonder if he, I mean, I know he got a pick in the game, interception in the game. I would like to see him make more splash plays. That's what we want to see from Stearns. I mean, he's a ball hawk. He's got great instinct. So I want to see him go out there and make more splash plays, because he's one of those guys that, you know, if that defense is going to be, you know, a really opportunistic defense, he's got to have a good year. Really impressed with Chris Brown. Man, Chris Brown is just such a good player. It's so strange that, and maybe he's just a late bloomer, so strange that it took his last 2 years for him to get on the field. But I really like him. Really like Kendre Coburn. He continues to push the pocket. He's doing really, really well. I'm just concerned about the linebackers, guys. I'm concerned about Overshown with the transition. I think in the future he's going to be a great young linebacker. But right now, not real. I don't think it's the lights coming on for him at linebacker just yet. And he's got a good D-line in front of him. So our linebackers, even though they're not necessarily high-caliber linebackers right now, they should be kept relatively clean because the D-line is legit.
Yeah.
Right? The more right. daddies line. So I'm a little concerned with their underwhelming performance versus Texas Tech. So that's my biggest concern, but we already knew that going in.
Well, I mean, the play right before the half said, I don't know if you were watching that on TV, remember the swing pass that was a lateral? If Overshown jumps on that, they got an easy Dicker field goal try.
So
you're right.
I didn't see that one.
That's right. You were at A&M, and Juwan Mitchell had a couple of what he thought touchdowns on the takeaways.
Hey, you're right.
How about Josh Thompson? You hadn't mentioned him yet.
I have not. Listen, I like the premise of Josh Thompson. Right?
I love what he could be. Yes.
Exactly. Right? I like the idea that, you know, he's long rangey. You see him with his shirt off, and he's, you know, swole, he's cut, and he looks like one of those, you know, a Legion of Boom, a Seattle Seahawks corner out there, right? He could be one of those guys. His hips, he has really stiff hips for a corner in the Big 12. That concerns me. Now, Quentin Jammer had really stiff hips, but Quentin Jammer had 36-inch pythons and a Greek god. So he's a little like a 4.3. So he's a little bit different, but I understand why they like Josh Thompson, especially in the system where they want press quarters coverage and they want to get their hands on receivers and reroute them. The problem is said that they didn't do that versus Texas Tech. They did it versus UTEP, but I think I am at 40 years old. I believe I can go out there and have a good bump and run technique versus UTEP receivers. Like, I don't think they were that impressive. Texas Tech, they got some dogs, as y'all know, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that came out there, and they were salivating, looking forward to them playing bump and run because they thought they could get off of those jams, and they did. They got away from those. When Texas is at the line of scrimmage using the bump and run technique, and they don't get a jam, and it ends up being a track meet, you see they're oftentimes out of position later on in the play when it comes time to make a play on the football. Mm-hmm. And one is connected to the other. So if they're not going to get a jam, just back them on up. If they're not going to get a jam up there, then back them up, because they're not doing themselves any good by just turning and running with wide receivers. It's just making it easy on the wideouts. So I think Chris Ash wants them to get a jam. Josh Thompson is probably the best at that. Deshaun Jameson was a little he was outmanned out there, if you will, because his size didn't really give him a matchup advantage. Or a way to match up with the Tech wide receiver. So I think he was at a disadvantage there. I do like Jalen Green, but Jalen Green has really bad eyes and he's got really bad technique, but he looks the part. So, and Kenyatta Watson also struggles with bump and run. So they got a lot of corners that look the part, but I don't think they play the part.
Yeah.
You played in a day where y'all didn't shuttle in a lot of cornerbacks. I mean, it was you and Jammer for the most part, you know. And does it come to a point, and Kirk and I always talk about this with wideouts, when they had all those wideouts last year, they didn't really hit a groove until he cut that down to like four main guys. Is he playing too many cornerbacks, and does he need to kind of cut a little bit of the fat off to see if he could get some more cohesion on that back end?
That's a great question. And then there's the opposite, you know, opinion, right? Said that I have to play these guys because I didn't get a spring practice to evaluate them. I didn't get a true off season to work with them and evaluate them. So I really need these guys to get these reps to see who's a player and who's not. Like who are my top corners and who's not. So I think there's an argument for both, but I would err on, I probably would err on your side. I'd probably be about picking my top two guys and making sure they're out there for the majority of the plays. I know it's a different era and they spread you out and they throw the football a lot more. So maybe you wear down the corners. But I said this on Saturday. I said, man, if they took me out of the game and I was the starting corner for Texas, I would have had probably a B.J. Foster moment. If that, yeah, right? You're just sitting down. You're going to sit down for a while. We're going to let him play. I'm like, no, I earned the spot. It's my spot. I'm the top quarterback. I mean, Coach Akina used to sit us in, like, rows based on the depth chart, right? You'd walk in there one day and then, somebody would be sitting a spot behind and then somebody else would have taken their spot. And that's the way we sat. The guy that was competing with me for my spot was literally breathing down my neck in the meetings. He wanted it that way, though, guys. He wanted it that way. You took pride in having winning that spot. It's my spot, all right? Yeah. I'm going and grind for it. I'm going to stay after practice for it. I'm going to come in early for it. It's my spot. I know Nathan Basher wants it. I know Michael Huff wants my spot. I know. So I'm working with young guys. I'm still going to help them. I want them to be the best version of themselves, but it is my spot because I am the best at this position here. I give my team the best chance to win. So I don't know if they're fostering that kind of attitude, right? That's that competitive currency that was trying to, get us to spend every day, to get us to cultivate that culture every day that, man, it was always about competition and you knew your spot was on the line every day because Texas had the best of the best in that DB room. And now I know there's everybody's going to play. It's kind of everybody gets a trophy kind of feel. Everybody gets a ribbon. Everybody gets a flag. Oh, yeah, everybody's going to play at Texas. And that is good. Everybody, that helps you recruit, right? When you say, hey, all three running backs are going to play, it helps you recruit other running backs. When you say, hey, play six DBs and all of them, we rotate those guys in and out. It helps you recruit other DBs. But when I was recruited to Texas, I told Mac Brown, like, I'm going to be the starting cornerback. It's going to be my spot and that's it. So I would have had a real problem with the new rotation of the or on the depth chart. You put an or next to my name on the depth chart, then Coach, me and you need to have a talk. That's my spot.
Who would you play at cornerback? Who do you think in your mind after two games are the best two cornerbacks on the team, Rod?
I think they're playing them. I think it's Josh Thompson and Deshaun Jameson are the top two cornerbacks. Okay. They have no question. I think Deshaun Jameson, he'll get beat because he takes chances, but makes mistakes. But, man, he's going to make some plays. He's going to make some – he's going to make them. You keep testing him, he's going to make you pay sooner or later. I love guys that got unshakable confidence. I think Jalen Green right now is – I think his confidence is a little low. I think right now that – because he hadn't made plays in a while and he had the injury last season. And I like Josh Thompson. I do. He's a veteran. I understand what they see in him. He does seem to be the best press coverage corner they have, and they want to play press man coverage. They should disrupt more routes versus Tech, and they couldn't. But I think Josh Thompson and Deshaun Jameson would be my two picks. I like Kenyatta Watson. I know he's a physical freak. They need to work more technique with him. And with Jalen Green, it's a confidence issue, man. At corner, when you're – your confidence is shot, I think, man, wide receivers can smell it like dogs smell fear. They know it, man. They know it. They come after. You can tell the body language. You don't see that with Deshaun Jameson when you get beat. You're going to get beat in the Big 12. You're going to get beat. But you just got to be able to recover really quickly. And I don't see that enough from Jalen Green.
I got one more question. It's like, why the hell aren't you on the coaching staff?
How many times have I said that to you, Kurt?
I mean, you know that stuff in and out.
And like I said, I give him a discount, man. I wouldn't even take the big time salary, man. You can hire me for pennies on the dollar.
Oh my God!
And what black mother is going to say no to Rod B in the living room when he's trying to?
Nobody's going to say no.
All I do is tell him my story, man. I'll say, listen, you see, you told me and my mama that I was going to graduate, and I believe it took like 15 years or 12 years later, but I graduated and UT kept their promise. They'll keep their promise to you.
I had no idea you went to medical school, Rod. I had no idea.
Well, we will keep trumpeting you and get you on that coaching staff or any coaching staff, if Texas isn't smart enough to hire you, somebody should, because you got so much knowledge. And, man, we just love you and your personality, man. Ben,
we do.
It's been great. This has been awesome.
I'll let you know. I love y'all's work. Y'all keep killing it, man.
Thanks for the education, Rod.
Appreciate it, man. Be good, dog.
Thank you.
On Second Thought.
That's the great Rob Babers, ladies and gentlemen. That's the great Rob Babers. And he is, he's as good as he sounds. He's as good as he looks. I worked with him for 3 years.
Yeah.
Just an awesome, awesome individual. And always a pleasure to have him on the show, Duck.
It's so much fun. And like I said, he's got so much knowledge. And it's not knowledge like you and I try to impart. He did it. He's played that role. And he's been a star on the field and had growing pains and gotten better and better. And yeah, that was fun.
You know what? Let's just keep it rolling, Duck. Big news in the NFL, the Pittsburgh Steelers, their game against the Tennessee Titans has been postponed. The Rona finally, it took the Rona 3 weeks, Doug, but the Rona said, look, NFL, you really think that you're going to get through a season without dealing with me? And so the Titans have had three players that I've probably never heard of. These players tested positive along with five team personnel staff. So that's eight. Now, on a related note, the Titans played the Minnesota Vikings this past week, beat them 31-30. But Minnesota reported no positives. And the Minnesota Vikings will play as scheduled at the Houston Texans on Sunday. What do you think this is going to do to the NFL moving forward? We knew it was coming.
Well, you know, they've been having these conversations since summer, you know, and you're right. I think everybody knew it was coming, and it is here. The virus remains undefeated to this point. And so I don't think there's any shock at Park Avenue NFL headquarters, but it'll be interesting. I know they've talked about moving games to Monday or, you know, moving to Tuesday whenever, but it's going to be interesting because as competitive as that league is, everybody's going to want to get the same number of games in. And I don't know if that's possible, but you figure the league's going to move mountains to try to get everybody on that same schedule. They have bye weeks figured in, but then how do you fit the teams together if they don't have same bye weeks? And then there's the week extra between the conference championships and the Super Bowl. You know, there's always that 2 week window in there. So maybe they have that extra week there, but it's hard as hell to push playoffs back and everything's on television and stuff. So I don't know. What would you do if you were Roger Goodell? And what would you try to get the owners and the coaches to agree to, Sid?
Well, the first thing I would do is hopefully there's a bye week in there somewhere where there's wiggle room. But boy, if you start pushing games back, you know, people make travel arrangements months in advance, and that's just a nightmare waiting to happen. I think the good thing about it, Duck, is there aren't as many fans involved, and a lot of fans travel of, like, the Steelers, for instance. We both know that Steelers and Buffalo Bills, they travel better as far as people from their home state traveling to other states. They travel as well as anyone. But now that the league – I don't think there were any fans at the last Steeler game. I watched some of it.
I don't think the Ravens game. Were there any at the Chiefs-Ravens game?
I think I did see a few, but there weren't that many, if any. No. And so I don't know if that's even a consideration to fans. They could always just say no fans this week and no issue refunds. But scheduling's a nightmare, Duck. And it's not like the NBA or the MLB where – if you don't play the same amount of games, it's not as big a deal because there's so many games.
Right.
16 games, and that could be the difference. One game could be the difference between you making the playoffs and missing it. So it's a tough call for Goodell. I don't know what he's going to do. And some things may change between now we're having this conversation on Wednesday where we tape and this weekend. So I don't know. I would say my first inclination would be to, first of all, you definitely quarantine those people that tested positive and they've shut down the facility And I think Monday will be your most viable option, especially since you have these rapid response tests at your disposal.
They have. They shut down the Tennessee building, and they also, I think they shut down the Minnesota building too, even though they didn't have any positives at all. I know Tennessee's playing Pittsburgh, and do you also maybe tell Pittsburgh to shut down their facility to try to make it more equitable? If Tennessee can't practice and be in the building physically, do you tell their opponent, Pittsburgh, that you need to shut it down? Fair's fair.
But well, you can tell them that, Doug, but are they going to listen? Mike Tomlin going to say, sure, we'll shut it down? I don't think Mike Tomlin would be happy with that. That decision would have to come from the owners. They would all have to get together. And maybe, Doug, I don't know this to be certain, but the ownership in NFL is usually a pretty organized group. Surely there's been some contingency plans that were discussed about just this sort of occasion, because we knew it was probably going to happen. As many people travel and as many people are on a football team and on a staff. So it probably has been discussed. If someone has to shut it down, maybe you shut it down too. Cause I know if the microphones don't work on the visiting team sideline,
right,
they make the home team shut down their mics.
Right.
This is a much bigger scenario than that. But I think fair is fair. But I don't know that Mike Tomlin would want to get down with that.
Well, I would say, sorry, Mike Tomlin, it's not up to you. The league office has determined Tennessee's not practicing. Guess what? You're not practicing either. And you know, a part of me wonders, would it be that big a deal? Because we know they probably don't hit much in NFL during the week.
They don't.
So it's the more cerebral, the mental part of it. And it's easy to govern. I mean, you tell Pittsburgh, you shut it down, and the league office sends a minion there to make sure that is enforced. So we know the league is taking it serious because they meted out fines of $1.75 million for coaches that didn't wear their mask. And there were some abusers off the charts, like John Payton. And
he didn't even try.
Nick Fangio and even Gruden, you know, they just – yeah, a lot of them didn't try. So I think they got their attention when they put out those fines. But as far as you're talked about scheduling, it's such a real problem. And I say push it back to Monday. If you have to push it back to Tuesday, do that. And then the following week, if you have to push those back to Monday – because fans, aren't many fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Houston hosting Minnesota Sunday, I think they'd plan to have, you know, a modicum number, like 10 or 13,000.
Mm-hmm. But they got it approved.
So I would play with the schedule. If you have to play on a Monday, have double headers like you and I've always been in favor of, do that.
I love double headers on Monday.
Play it on a Tuesday and just got to be flexible because, like we said, the virus is undefeated.
The virus is undefeated, and it's going to continue to be undefeated until we find a vaccine. Since we're talking NFL, we're going to be watching from the house this weekend. What are your thoughts on Baker Mayfield venturing in to Dallas to play the Cowboys, his Cleveland Browns? That Dallas secondary, and I know Rob B could probably speak on this too. He's just such a brain when it comes to – secondary play, and he should be a coach. Do you think the Browns are going to light up that secondary? Is this the time that Odell Beckham and Juice Landry finally click in the same game and Baker goes off? Because the Cowboys just might be the worst secondary in all of football.
Well, they've got their share of problems there. We've seen that. That's been clear. But, you know, Rod B talked about effort, and you look at a Trayvon Diggs who's been burned so much, but you look at his effort in racing down DK Metcalf.
I really like him.
Boy, you can't coach that. That's the heart that you like to see. And so they've got their issues. They do. And you talk about the Cleveland Browns, they're the winning Cleveland Browns now.
Look out. Look out.
He got a winning record. And, you know, this is going to mean everything to Baker Mayfield. And I always like it when, it's just another game. Okay, you're coming back to your home state. You're playing the Cowboys. It's not another game. And, you know, he's going to want to be just really sharp. But I like the Cowboys in this one because the Cowboys are not in a groove. You know, they've been behind by double digits and had to play from behind. They can't use Zeke as much as they want. What do you have, like 34 yards rushing against Seattle?
And you know what? You can't really feed Zeke when Russell Wilson's the other quarterback.
No, because you get behind.
On the gas and you're behind and you know he's not going to stop throwing. You just don't have time to establish Ezekiel Elliott. And Tony Pollard has fallen out of favor because he fumbles and he's dumb on the go on kick returns. And he's just not a cerebral player. But I like the Dallas offense, Duck. This built for shootouts. Let's just keep it real. Michael Gallup finally showed up. CeeDee Lamb's as good as we thought he was going to be.
But Cedric Wilson coming out of nowhere.
Wilson. How about Cedric Wilson getting all those targets and not dropping a pass? He was electric. Dallas is built for that kind of game. I don't know if Cleveland's built for a shootout, but on the surface, Duck, if you look at the personnel, Baker Mayfield isn't as good as we thought he'd be at this point. Not saying that he won't be.
Right.
But he's capable. He's got two really good receivers. Odell Beckham is elite. I think the offense has curtailed his production. And they've got the best 1-2 punch at running back in the league. Nick Chubb is very good. And Kareem Hunt is a starting running back, had he not slugged a woman on tape. He's starting somewhere. So I think it's going to be way closer than it probably should be, but I think that Dallas has the right amount of desperation after what went down in the Pacific Northwest. I think the Cowboys are going to get a W, and I think they're going to be okay this weekend.
Well, and they added Austin Hooper, the tight end, to their arsenal. And like you said, that running back tandem's unmatched. Nobody can compared to, you know, a Chubb and Hunt in the backfield. So I think it's going to be another shootout, Sid. I see another wild one. You know, it could be another 38-35 kind of game, but there'd better be a sense of urgency with this Cowboy team. You do not want to fall to 1-3, even though the NFC East has kind of been a joke.
It's as bad as it was last year.
And that's going to save them because you got six games there that you ought to be able to win five of them, if not more. So, but it should start here.
Yeah, there's only one good quarterback in the NFC.
Yeah, it should start with the game against the Browns. And, you know, Jerry's going to want McCarthy, okay, put your pedal to the metal and get a W at home, which I think.
You mentioned sense of urgency. The Houston Texans, 0-3. Yeah. Our friend John McClain, like we said to Rod, he said that they were going to be 0-3, and he thinks they're going to finish 10-6. Is Bill O'Brien, is he going to survive this, Duck? And we ask that question every year. Neither one of us is a big fan of B.O.B.
Right.
But they could lose to the Minnesota Vikings, who have an elite running back and a quarterback, while he can be kind of a mental dummy at times in Kirk Cousins, he can still light you up. So I love Deshaun Watson, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Vikings went in there and beat Houston.
Won't shock me either. You're talking sense of urgency on both parts. I mean, you got two winless teams here desperate to try to save their season. You don't want to start 0-4. I don't know if there's been an 0-4 team, you know, make the playoffs, but I can't imagine the likelihood is very strong. So, they've got to produce in this one. And it's like I watch the Texans and I just go, man, that DeAndre Hopkins trade just doesn't make sense to me because David Johnson, while he's still got something left in the tank, is not a game changer.
Not anymore.
Mm-hmm. And poor Deshaun Watson doesn't have that go-to guy. I know, you know, Will Fuller's flashed a little bit.
Okay.
He's going to stay healthy. Brandon Cooks has done nothing so far. They're free agent. Randall Cobb is past his prime. So I just don't see much there for Texans. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year from what I've seen. And I wrote in my nine things this week, hire Eric Bieniemy. Bring him down there and see what he can do, because, boy, they sure need a change of blood down in Houston.
And I know Eric Bieniemy is a great offensive mind. He's been interviewed 7 times.
Yeah.
And has never been offered a job in the NFL. He's going to get a job.
Yeah.
Here. And I know how this is going to come off, but I'm going to say it anyway, Doug. I hope he doesn't take a bad job, because – it's hard enough for a black man to get a head coaching job in the league. Mm-hmm. And if the Jets fire Adam Gase, I'm not in love with him as a Jets coach, but there are some jobs out there, hopefully, like you just mentioned, Deshaun Watson's going to be great for another 8 to 10 years. That's the job that Eric Bieniemy should want. It's a great town. It's a pretty good organization. I still don't like what went down with Rick Smith. I still think there's more to that than meets the eye. Bill O'Brien becomes the GM. He's not even a good head coach. Why is he a GM? But I think Eric Bieniemy should be very selective, because if he gets a bad job and doesn't win, like, no one's won with the Jets since Parcells left. If he gets a bad job, or someone won, whoever was the coach when someone won when Sanchez was a quarterback. But anyway, I can't remember the coach's name, but it will set black coaches back. So he's got to be smart in his decision-making.
Well, I got a job for him. If he doesn't go to Houston, look to Atlanta, Atlanta Falcons, where Dan Quinn is blowing big lead after big lead and hadn't been the same since Super Bowl in Houston.
Dan Quinn's not going to make it through the season, though.
No, and I think, well, he knows what to do with offenses, and they've got some offensive weapons there with the Falcons, with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, and Matt Ryan still got a lot left as well. So I'd love to see him at a place like Atlanta that's been in a Super Bowl, or Houston, you know, that could use the infusion of energy and smarts that Eric Bieniemy would bring.
Look, it's been a great podcast, man. I love doing this, and when we have people like Rod on, it just makes it even more fun. We're gonna keep rolling with it. The Texas Longhorns at home, 11 a.m. on Saturday. We'll be back next week. Check out the Longhorn Confidential podcast that drops on Monday, where we will break down the game. Longhorns Unfiltered right after the game as well. And we'll be a part of that. So that'll do it for episode 194 of On Second Thought. We got to thank Rod B for stopping by and dropping some knowledge on us. For the Duck Perk Bowls, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.